Anna here. Now, are you an entrepreneur who wants to write and publish a book about your own failures turned successes? Well, good news, that's what my company, Legacy Launchpad, does. Find out more at LegacyLaunchpadPub.com. That's LegacyLaunchpadPub.com. Now, should you do a book, you ask? I think so. Why? Because you're worth it. Now back to the show. Now, the best books are made up of stories. And let's face it, the best stories are about bouncing back from failure. I'm Anna David, obsessed with books, a New York Times bestselling author, and the CEO of Legacy Launchpad Publishing. And I only achieve those things because I picked myself up again after failing and found my way to success. And that makes me uniquely qualified to get the best stories about failure and success out of other people.
Failure is always a learning experience.
So after 6 months, I told him that I Googled sociopath and he had all of the symptoms and I found myself out of job.
At that time, it was supposed to be a side hustle.
Well, the side hustle started to make far more money than the real hustle. So after six months, I quit my job.
Welcome to Fail Your Way to Success.
Hello, and welcome to the podcast that loves you, your failures, and your successes equally. I am what my guest today called a Hall of Fame failer. Not failure, failer. And proud to be it. I hope you are too. My guest today, let's just get right into it. He is amazing, not just a master of acronyms, because Hall of Fame famers. Yeah, HOF, he called me a HOF, but he has many other acronyms, but he is a delightful human who, financial planner who exited his business. He is too classy to say for how much, but let's just say a very comfortable amount. He helps people, entrepreneurs, grow their businesses and their dreams and exit. And he's a Colby score 4691. And if you listen to the Justin Breen episode, you will know how significant that is. His name is David Trent, and in this episode, we talked about what it's like to fail every day. We talked about logging your successes and failures at the end of the day. We talked about the biggest failure being really screwing up when you're coaching your son's second grade basketball team. And we talked about so much more. So I'm going to stop talking and give you David Trent. My external recording.
Good.
David, it's a delight to have you here. Thank you. Thank you. I'm not just saying that because you told me before we recorded that I have kind of single-handedly made you understand the wonders of Taylor Swift, but admit it, I have.
Absolutely, you did. I told you I went from neutral on Taylor Swift to being a fan after listening to your podcast.
Well, yeah, the only more gratifying thing is if you had gone from negative and I had swayed you to positive. So let's talk about your failures. You told me that you can't quite rival my failures, but you've had your own. So talk to me.
Well, can I start with a fun story?
Please.
That all of these are shaping. So I coached my avid son and a daughter who are now 33 and 29 years old. My son Carter was strong-willed from the day he came out of the womb, and loved sports, loved competing. So I had the joy of coaching their teams. I coach his basketball team, and he's in second grade. We're playing at a local boys club, very competitive for that age group. It was the most competitive you could be in, which was perfect for him because he was so competitive. Well, we're playing this private school that we really wanted to beat, and you know, kind of the rich kids, so to speak, if you will. And keep in mind, we're second grade. I'm coaching. So the score is tied 12 to 12. We get there's maybe 30 seconds left in the game. We get a steal. And so we have the ball. I call a timeout. Mm-hmm. Okay. I don't know if you're familiar with basketball. We did not have any timeouts. We mm-hmm. were out of timeouts. And so that's a technical foul. Do you know what a technical foul is?
No. Okay. I mean, it doesn't sound right. Good.
No, it's not good. So technical foul means we go from having the ball to being able to score and win the game to the other team gets two free throws and the ball. So we've gotten this feel. I've called a timeout. We're in the huddle. I'm putting together a play to win the game, hopefully. The referee comes over and tells me what's going on without the kids being able to hear. I have to go get back in the huddle and explain to them what's happened. And so I explained to them that I called a timeout. We didn't have a timeout. Their other team's getting two free throws and the ball. So they all, and I didn't say this, but we're probably going to lose the game, which we did. And I remember my son looked at me. He's red faced because he's been playing so hard. And he goes, "Dad, what were you thinking?" And it was a moment. I didn't sleep that night. It's funny because you're not sleeping, and that bothers you. But then it bothers you because it's a second grade basketball game, and you're not sleeping, right? But anyway, it was a cool moment in time, and we laugh about it now. But what did I learn from that? I didn't do that again, I'll tell you that. And so, and you learn too that just it's there's so much benefit to staying composed in all situations. And I've kind of, I don't know if lost my composure is the right word, but anyway, a
Yeah,
little bit of,
reacting rather than responding,
there you go.
right? Because
Perfect.
a response is, well, so what triggered it, I'm assuming, was fear that you needed to do it if they were going to win
Right.
the game.
Fear, excitement, just, yeah. And so,
Adrenaline.
yeah, respond rather than react. That sums it up perfectly. So,
Yeah. I got to tell myself that all day long because I'm a very reactive person. Now, as a metaphor for other, sort of business failures you've had, would you say that reacting out of fear has caused them or contributed to them?
yes, I think that's fair. Not, but maybe not all failures, but for sure. So,
Tell me about your most epic failure in business.
it may be tough to identify the most epic, but I would say I started my wealth management firm from scratch when I was 33. It was a I had this combination of overconfidence with being naive, and naive in a sense of, and it was a huge blessing because if I hadn't been both of those, I wouldn't have started my own firm. And not in a cocky way. It was just probably, maybe we'll call it extreme confidence. And man, the first, and I had a business plan, but the first year in particular was really tough. And then the first 5 years were brutal. And luckily I was 100% owner. And what I mean by that, it was, I didn't, if I'd had a partner, we probably would have folded up 10 after a couple of years because I was literally taking on debt every single month. And the way I set up my firm is when a client came on board, let's say they had $1 million to manage, we just started charging a quarterly management fee. So if they were paying 10,000 a year, it was 2,500 a quarter. So I didn't have a means to go hit a big lick and have a bunch of revenue come in. Well, the beauty of that is I was building a recurring revenue stream, right? But building it was the hard part. So I wouldn't change anything that I did. But I think that first year was probably, I would call it an epic failure that I overcame. So I was going to do workshops in the town that I live in now, in Little Rock, Arkansas. And I was going to, through those workshops, I had a plan to generate people that would come meet with me. We did a workshop on how to build a portfolio using no load funds is what we called it. And so what I did, I taught a 2-hour workshop and taught investors how to do this on their own. But at the end, I would say, and they knew I was there to get business. At the end, I would say, "Hey, if you want to hire a professional, I would love the opportunity to meet with you and tell you how we work." So those worked, but they just didn't work to the volume, near the volume I thought they would. So within 2 months, I got to get to another market. So I keep doing Little Rock. I start doing Dallas, and I started doing Memphis. So Dallas is 300 miles away, Memphis 200. So could drive to both places and started doing workshops in both of those cities. And so I've got me and I have a full-time assistant, and I'm trying to operate in three different cities. And eventually I decided, okay, can't do that, but I can still do Little Rock in Dallas. So I felt like, so that first year and the first 5 years, I would say a lot of failing. And just kind of getting one client at a time. And then you probably have this experience in your career. You look back and you go, how in the world did I get through that?
Yeah, I mean, Justin Breen and I talked about it, delusional overconfidence, which I do think is one of the benefits of youth. You
You're so
just,
you're you you your language is much better than mine. I like delusional overconfidence.
I
That's
think
great.
Justin came up with it. I think we came up with it together because it's like it is my best and worst qualities is I just jump in without thinking that failure's a possibility, which is hilarious because as you told me, I'm the Hall of Fame failure. So
Now, Hall of Fame failer, ER.
fail, yeah, fail-er, not fail your. Your. So, okay. So you've started this company on your own. You're acquiring debt as you build it. And so, sure, in retrospect, we can say, well, it wasn't a failure because look at this amazingly successful business you have now. But at the time, did it feel like it, or were you just sort of plunging ahead without thinking about it?
Repeat the question one more time.
So when in those 5 years that you were building and you're acquiring debt, did you consider it yourself failing? Did you think of it as failing, or did you just think of it as what was required in order to build?
Well, I think there were points in time both of those were going on. So yeah, I did think of it, and you do think, am I going to make it through this? And so there were periods, yeah, where you go, man, am I going to figure this out? And it really came down, it was a little bit of a race to get enough clients to where I had more, more enough revenue to cover a legitimate business. And so that's really the 4 to 5 year point, was when I crossed that, where I started having more revenue than expenses. Not only was I taking on debt, I don't even remember the number. It was big for that time, maybe well over 100,000 in credit card debt, at and juggling some of those cards with, 18, 20% plus interest rates. And so it was just, yeah, it felt like a race getting up early. I read a lot of personal development books during that period, and I read a lot of those in my 20s as well that really helped me. So
What were some of those books?
I was trying to find the other day The Power of Positive Thinking by Norman Vincent Peale. I've got that book, and it's like it's just I've got the original. It's somewhere. I know I haven't lost it, but just marked up. Notes in there. I read that over and over. Jim Rohn, Rohn. Are you familiar with Jim Rohn? He was big. Now, his was mostly audio stuff that I remember. Earl Nightingale, Lead the Field. I don't know if you've ever heard of The Greatest Salesman in the World by Og Mandino.
No, I thought the greatest one was Zig Ziglar.
Well, Zig Ziglar was one too. I had the opportunity to meet him personally, which was really
Oh.
cool. But Og Mandino and The Greatest Salesman in the World is a classic. And I don't know if the recording is still around, but he was had this deep, thick New York accent. And that audio version of that book, and I've looked at the Audible version is not him. I think he's probably deceased now. But that book is fantastic. All those books are. But The Greatest Salesman in the World, it was awesome. So,
So if we're going to talk about being, $100,000 in debt with 20% interest rates, can we brag for a minute? Where is your business now?
well, fortunately, I had a liquidity event, an exit this past year. So we I merged my firm in 2021 with a firm called Legacy Capital. I sold a portion of my ownership at that point. I was still the largest owner among my two part my what was me and two partners, and then had two younger advisors, actually three, that I transitioned all of my clients to. So I sold a chunk to the two of those advisors in late 22. And then in 23, fully exited, and so kind of had a three bites of the apple exit, and had a bit of a fail on that third bite of the apple, and that third piece ended up in a business divorce. Luckily, we got it resolved by September 30. Ended up being a huge blessing the way that played out. I wouldn't have thought that. So I'm fully exited, and at 60, I hope I can live to 130. So I've still got another 70 years, and have launched into my next chapter, which is largely around coaching and speaking, and eventually having Anna David help me write a book. So.
Eventually, possibly by the end of this interview, I will have swayed you. Not that you need swaying. I know a book is going to be so good for this next chapter in your life. So can we be tacky, because I do have that tendency, and talk about how much you exited for?
Well,
Let's be general if you want to.
legally I can't say because of that third bite of the apple. So let me just say it was enough to where I, with other assets, I am at work optional lifestyle, meaning money is not necessary for me to live. So. Because I can live off the income of my investments. How about that?
I like that. Oh, should
I
I?
would happily share that with you, but I
We
need
can't.
to
We can't
not.
get you carted off to jail for sharing it on this podcast, but you seem to live comfortably too, not just live.
When and that's what I did every day, every week. I would ask those kind of questions to my clients. So I appreciate the fact that you ask. I love it. So.
Well, so and now what you coach people on often is exiting, correct?
Yes, and I can tell you, and people can kind of derive from that, but we were, as a firm, we were managing, I was 40% owner after we merged, and then that ownership got down to 33%. We were managing over $1 billion in assets for clients, and doing probably, I can share this. As a firm, we were doing 7 to 8 million in revenue. I would say 4 to 5 million of that was on the wealth management side. So
A year.
a year, right?
God, if I hadn't gotten like a 400 on my math SAT, I could have done that math and really spouted it out. But unfortunately, that part of my brain doesn't exist. But listeners, you're probably savvier than I am with numbers. So let me ask you this. You mentioned the work divorce. Was that a failure? Was there a failure in that relationship?
Yeah, there was, and there it was around our operating agreement, and there were some things I could have and should have done differently, it was yes, it was, I would call it a fail at the time, but I'm a big believer in the phrase, everything in life happens for us, not to us, and I knew going through that, I would look back at some point and go, this is why that happened. And I would have a very strong faith. And I thought that might be 3 years from now, 2 years from now. But actually, by probably October of last year, it all was very clear to me why it happened. A big reason is it launched me into my next chapter a lot quicker. I would have stayed on board in a limited capacity. But this just kind of broke that and allowed me to move forward and be done with that chapter of my business life, if you will. So.
See, what I love about that is this notion that, everything is happening for us and not to us. And with failure,
There are studies that show, you know, most of us are terrible at failing because it destroys our confidence. So to be able to have that perspective of this is going to work out for the better while it's happening is the key. It yep. is.
Massive, massive.
I'll tell you, you know, as someone who's been fired from every job she's ever had, I've had firings where I'm like, you know what? This is for the best. And, you know, and pretty quickly my life would turn around. And then I've had ones where I'm kicking and screaming and talking about lawsuits and all these things. And my God, did it take a long time for everything to work out afterwards. So it really is in the attitude about it. Don't right. you think?
Well, absolutely. And that doesn't by any means mean that you get up every day and say, man, this is great. I've failed. Everything's going to be awesome. And it's there, as you know, you have some tough times, and you've had the good fortune of meeting my wife, Tiny, on a Zoom
mm-hmm.
call.
Mm-hmm.
And she has been I can't say enough about how awesome she is just on a daily basis with, because I look at it like I fail every single day, right? Whether it's you make a bad decision with, you know, you say I'm going to eat right today and you don't eat right. Okay. So you have all these little failures throughout the day. There's not any day that goes by. So I look at all of those and you try to learn and get better and grow and progress. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an interesting idea. Failing every day because there's a million little decisions every day. I mean, some days don't you just kill it with the food and the exercise and the great decisions, or no?
You do kill it. And I'll say someday, some tough days, what I have learned is if you take time at the end of the day, I do two things that help me a lot is just write down here's breakthroughs I've had today. And maybe the last couple hours of the day were something happened that was, you know, stressful, caused some anxiety, or you've had a really busy day. And I get to the end of the day, and if I really think back, Jim Rohn calls it run the tapes again on the day, the week, the month. But if you do it daily, what will happen with me a lot of times is I'll go, man, I had some great stuff happen today that maybe I forgot about because I was dwelling on one or two things that maybe you got a bad email or, you know, or it could be any number of things. Or maybe you're just fatigued and you forget all that you accomplished in that day. I love Atomic Habits and also The Compound Effect, which is similar by Darren Hardy. But James Clear talks about in Atomic Habits is stacking good days, just one good day after another. And you're going to have tough days, but if you just keep stacking, and the same thing with habits, once you think about it, at some point brushing your teeth became a habit. You don't have to record that and write down, I brushed my teeth today. Mm-hmm. That's the same way with every habit. And that's the way you really grow. And that's the way I've continued to grow. So is tracking habits. And then once you get them to where they're just second nature and you're doing them, now sometimes you may get back off the wagon on those and have to come back to them. But for the most part, if you can just kind of groove a habit, and I went off on a tangent there, but.
Oh, it's so good though, because I forget sometimes they say 30 days, sometimes they say 90 days, however long it takes for you to get this new habit to be a habit.
Right.
But yeah, it's everything. And I love it too, as somebody who has been calorie counting for the last 5 weeks, something I've never deigned to do. I was joking to a friend whenever I wanted to lose weight before, the only methods I had were the misery diet and drugs. So to actually do it in this way, you know what? 5 weeks in, not so hard anymore.
That's awesome. Just, so are you counting calories?
Counting calories.
I think I was listening to, you know, Ed Milet is?
He's got the big podcast.
My big podcast. I was listening this morning. He had a guy named Lane Norton on as a guest who was super impressive, has like a PhD, and they were talking about it and they were talking about all this stuff and basically from, you know, keto and I'm not real well informed on all of that, but they came back and they were basically saying at the end of the day, it's all about calories. And
No.
you can track fat and all this other stuff. And they essentially said it kind of comes down to that. And I mean, it's not as simple as that. And you need to eat, I get it, with real food and try to eat healthy, but at the end of the day, it's calories.
Well, and I will say this, and I know this is not a weight loss podcast. It
So
simplifies everything because you're like carbs to fat and macros and all these things. And to just go, okay, it's this many calories a day. I have an app. It as we as addressed, I'm not good at math. So it does the adding for me. And then it's just simple. And I do think also, because we do have to start, no, we don't have to start wrapping up yet, but we have to start thinking about wrapping up. It's like this idea that there are simple steps to getting over failure. There are simple steps to feeling good. So I loved what you were saying about tracking at the end of the day. In 12-step land, we call that the 10th step. At the end of every day, the 10th of the 12 steps is going through and doing an inventory of your day.
Oh,
The
wow. Okay. I
things,
didn't know that. That's awesome.
yeah. And I'm terrible about doing it. I haven't been doing it in ages, but it's like, what did I do well? And not what did I do badly, but what could I have done better? And I actually have a journal called The Right Method that I sell. And David, as such a good consumer of my content, I will expect you to go buy it. But it's basically a journal where you track these things at the end of the day. Available on Amazon. Okay, so let me ask you this. What do you think? So what are your top tips for overcoming failure?
I think reading, personal development, listening to podcasts, finding stuff that resonates with you. So important to have relationships that people that can maybe help you through those tough times. And the reading's been a huge thing for me. Another book I didn't, well, two books I didn't mention. One by Rob, these are older books, Robert Schiller. It's called Tough Times Never Last. My dad's favorite saying was tough times never last, but tough people do. He had, and maybe it's finding someone like this. I was blessed to have a mom and dad that I was had a phenomenal upbringing, but they went through, especially, well, both of them, but my dad, who's still living, he went through so much growing up. I mean, I just did a post on LinkedIn. I wrote an article that they had an outhouse growing up till he was in the 10th grade. Didn't have
Wow.
running water. They had a well outside. His mother died of leukemia when he was 12. Has a high school education. They put four kids through college, three through a private school through SMU. None of us took on any debt. So
Wow.
that's been probably the biggest for me is just reflecting on my father and everything he went through. Even as growing up, he would not go bust, but there were some real tough times. And and through all that, we had a great upbringing. But I think finding someone, whether you know them personally or you're going to read about them or listen to a podcast that resonates with you to get you through those tough times. And a big part of mine is my faith. I'm just a is just and prayer and so combination of things.
Yeah, and I mean, you are such a clear consumer of content. I feel like a lot of entrepreneurs like to brag about, I read 52 books a year or whatever, and you actually do. You are actively listening to podcasts, you are actively reading. How are you reading a book a week?
Yes, So, another couple other acronyms, TMA, take massive action. So when things are tough, just start taking action, and don't get too caught up in what's that action going to produce. Just take action, the best action you think you can take. MBT, a mistake becomes training. So how is that mistake gonna? What can I learn from that? We hear it over and over and over, but man, it's so true, so true. And then focus on, if you're going through tough times, I try to do this just daily, but focusing on other people, making them feel important, You get so much joy for it's a selfish thing in a way. You get joy out of it. And it's not a bad selfish thing, but it's just, you know, and it not that that has to be genuine, right? You can't, that's not a that's awful if it's not genuine. But sometimes if you're going through tough times, that can kind of help you as you're mentally trying to press forward, you know. So
Yeah, I love it. I was talking to somebody about that yesterday, and they were asking why does helping other people make you feel good? And it's like, because it gives me a break from my brain, which is going to be obsessing over me,
yeah.
which is no fun. So fantastic. I would be remiss if we didn't talk about your book. Do you have clearer ideas about what that book is going to be?
Yeah, I think one of the things you educated me on was just talk about how we're talking about today, talk about how you failed, that people can learn from that. You know, this past week I came up with you know, a flywheel of things that I want to do in my life going forward. And a big part of that is coaching and mentoring, but there's other personal aspects of that. But a recurring theme around everything I want to do, I came up with an acronym. Here we go again. Bingo. All right. I call it the Bingo Breakthrough. Nicole came up, who you also met, came up with Breakthrough. So, bingo, you got to stay with me here. Really need a visual, but it's the B is for BEB. And then N, I'm going to take IN, and we can put a lot of words with that. But let's just start with BN for the good of others. Okay, BN for the good of others. And that's a theme. Now, what's cool about N is it's the first two letters of a lot of cool words. Be intentional, inspirational. I'm reading here. Involved, inventive, interested, invested, intrigued, ingrained, inquiring, insightful, intuitive. I'm respelling encouraging with an I, encouraging for the good of others or for the goals of others. Now, G has three words right now, goals, good, or gains. I'm doing wordplay with this acronym, but I love the Bingo Breakthrough. And if you can, every aspect of your life, do I need to trademark that real quick?
Well, if someone listening is going to go grab it, I don't know. I will say, I can't remember if I told you this, but when I hear a good idea, I actually can feel it in my body. It's the closest thing I have to a gut reaction. And I had it when you said Bingo Breakthrough.
Okay.
Jeez.
Well,
Don't steal it. Maybe you should go trade. You can't trademark a book title, but you can trademark IP. So
okay. Well, not
I
that.
love that. I love
What
that.
you know what
Go
matters? It
on.
resonates with me, and it's a good. But it's awesome to hear you like it. So.
I like it a lot. I will say the acronym I've come up with for fail is First Accept Its Life.
I like
Yes.
that.
And I
Yeah.
think that's a good note to end on. Well, David, is there anything I didn't ask you that you would like to say?
No, I would just say, and this is, I guess this could fall under MOFI, MOFI, making you feel important, but it's genuine. And I've learned a lot from you and just all of the ways that you have failed because of the massive action that you've taken in your life. And I'm sure there's many things I don't even know about. And I think it's so awesome that you're a brand new first time mother at this stage
Yeah.
in your life. That's awesome. So,
Well, and you've had the pleasure of seeing Benjamin over Zoom. So, congratulations to you.
yes.
Well,
That's gonna be a ladies' man for sure.
I know we got to have the talk with him early. That's what
Probably in
I
the next
know.
few weeks, I would think.
But I mean, you should see, he's got two girlfriends already, and he is not even 8 months old. Well, David, thank you so much for doing this. Listeners, thank you so much for listening, and I will talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening to Fail Your Way to Success. Now, if there's anything I love more than a failure to success story, it's a review. So I hope you'll think about leaving one. For more information about the show, go to failyourway.com. And for more information about publishing a book about how you failed your way to success, or just to find out more about what I do, go to legacylaunchpadpub.com.